Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and many people may or may not know that I'm a fan of the Shakespeare stories and the plays and the books, the movies, the TV shows that have been adapted from those stories, those plays. And one of my favorite adaptations, I guess the past decade, were the Star Wars adaptations. the Star Wars trilogy done in Shakespeare. And when I first saw that I was so tickled pink, and I hadn't realized that they had continued. So the author of these mighty tomes, Ian Desher, is here to talk about how we got from Shakespeare to Star Wars and some of the other Star Warsian, I should say Shakespearean, interpretations of not just Star Wars, but other pop iconic tales. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Summer. Thanks for having me.
He said the first time I saw the first Star Wars Shakespeare interpretation with Darth Vader in 16th century garb, I laughed so hard, so hard. And I said, this is brilliant. This, to me, this was better than Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, because I don't know, I just have a soft spot for Shakespeare, and I wish I had studied more, but seeing how many other people go back to Shakespeare as inspiration for new versions of stories is a lot of fun. So how did William Shakespeare's Star Wars come about?
It was almost exactly 10 years ago, actually. I watched the Star Wars trilogy with some good friends of mine, and then I read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies not too long after that. And then shortly after finishing Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, I went to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with my family. And so I sort of had all three of these things popping around in my head. And I was at the Shakespeare Festival when I sort of had the idea, you know, it'd be really fun to take Star Wars and rewrite it as a play by Shakespeare. And I looked up Quirk Books online because I knew they had done Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and their editor's email address was there on the website. So I sent him an email completely out of the blue, not really understanding how these things are supposed to work, but just sort of flying blind. And he wrote me back enough encouragement. You know, he said, that's an interesting idea, and if you write something, I'll read it. And so I spent the next few weeks putting together the first act of five, and sent it off to him. And he called me that morning and said, I really like this and I want to do it. And the next step is to talk to Lucasfilm about it. So he had a contact at Lucasfilm from a previous book that he'd worked on with them. And he sent what I had done off to her. She sort of floated it around there, and they came back to us and said, essentially, if we're going to do this, we want him to have more fun with it. Essentially, take this concept, you know, even farther and really have fun with it. And so we did that, and I revised the first couple of scenes and added R2-D2 speaking in English and some of the stormtroopers talking about getting drinks at Mos Eisley with Darth Vader, things like that. And so we sent it back to them, and at that point they were happy to enter into the licensing conversation, which all sort of happened between Quirk Books and Lucasfilm. I was blissfully unaware of it for the most part. And yeah, less than a year after having the idea, the book came out. So that's the history.
And millions of new writers are going, he did what and how long with who?
Yeah. Like I say, I was flying blind, and it was all dumb luck, really.
Oh my goodness. Just the fact that there was just a casual, oh yeah, I know somebody at Lucasfilms, let me give them a call. That the fact that didn't alone didn't take a year is amazing. And did you have any direct, I guess, input or suggestions from Lucasfilms about where to, how to frame these stories?
Those came really at the editorial stage. So once I had written something, they, you know, would review the manuscripts and they would let me know if there was anything, that they felt was off. So to give you an example, in the first book, when Governor Tarkin decides that they're going to go to Alderaan and basically use Alderaan to threaten Princess Leia, I originally wrote a soliloquy for Darth Vader where he's talking about how he really doesn't like the idea of killing innocent people. And they read that and said, no, at this point, Darth Vader is fully bad. He wouldn't have any compunction about going and killing innocent people. So I rewrote the speech and basically just turned it around 180 degrees. And it became a speech about how he doesn't mind killing innocent people. And that was accepted.
Wow. So how long did it take? Because you did the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and the sequel trilogy. So how much did you have to watch those movies to get this down?
Well, I often say that I really just watch them once, just very, very slowly, is sort of how my process works. But the first book was, I wrote in probably about 4 months, not counting the editorial stage after that. And then the next two books came out the year after that. And then the next three books, the prequel trilogy, all came out the year after that. And then with the sequel trilogy, those sort of came out as the movies appeared, each about 6 months or a year after the movie. So those were happening on a different time scale. But when those happened, those were happening really quickly because we were trying to get them out quickly.
Mm-hmm. Did you have access to the scripts, the screenplays, or were the movies themselves, the finished films, your primary sources?
Yeah, really just the finished films. I wish I you know, I would have loved to have gotten the scripts early, but that was not going to happen. So yeah, it was the finished films, and with each one, I bought. DK comes out with a, you know, sort of guide to all of the characters and vehicles and all of that kind of stuff. So I bought that for each of the new movies because that helped with specific names of things that watching the movie alone wouldn't give you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a few people who've written novelizations of the movies, and they do get scripts ahead of time, but it's like under lock and key with a
right.
A ring wraith guarding them. So
yep.
So what inspired the branching out beyond Star Wars? Because I saw the Clueless and the Back to the Future one, and I'm like, wait, what?
So it was sort of in the lull between the prequels and the sequel trilogy when it started coming out. Quirk had the idea to sort of take the Shakespearean adaptation idea and then extend it to other movies. And so they had already done a book. They had done a children's book version of Back to the Future. So they already had a good relationship with Universal for that. And I was thrilled to do Back to the Future. It's a movie I grew up with. And then they also suggested doing Mean Girls at the same time. So we came out with both of those on the same day. And then we did Clueless the next year. Yeah, so those that's how those happened. And it would surprise me if there are any more of those, but who knows?
If you were approached to do more in the Pop series, what would be, you know, the two that you would really, really want to jump on?
I mean, I'd love to do The Princess Bride. That's a favorite of mine. I always thought it would be fun to do some sort of Harry Potter thing where you would get to not write one of the books or movies, but do sort of a prehistory of Hogwarts. So a play sort of about the founding of Hogwarts, written by Shakespeare, you know, would sort of be the idea. So yeah, I'd love to do those too.
Nice. What about something like, I don't know, Game of Thrones or Doctor Who, something with a lot of weight to it?
Sure. In fact, Game of Thrones was bandied about for a little while with my former editor, and it didn't ever end up happening. We did do we actually pitched a Shakespearean Jurassic Park to the Michael Crichton estate, and they didn't go for it. But yeah, I mean, basically, what I've sort of learned over the years is that anything that's a good story that has memorable dialogue is going to work pretty well as a Shakespearean adaptation.
I'm remembering that there were a series of books back in the 90s that was on a planet where the sentient beings were dinosaurs, and you had a dinosaur scholar trying to, like, sort of a Galileo type, trying to let the other dinosaurs know, hey, there's an asteroid.
Oh, huh. That's funny. I haven't read those. That sounds fun.
I can't even remember the author. Now I'm gonna have to go back and figure that out. But yeah, those exist. Those, so I'm imagining a T-Rex or a Velociraptor performing Hamlet.
Yeah,
And now my
mean,
brain hurts.
that was one of the things. I actually think that was one of the things that turned them off from the way we pitched it, was that I had written a speech for one of the dinosaurs to say, and I think they weren't into that.
Oh man.
Which
That's
is fine. It's fair.
okay, so they didn't want to stretch imagination so far that they snapped. Okay, we
Yeah,
can see that. We
exactly.
can
Yep.
see that. So what are you working on now? I mean, is there more Shakespeare coming out? Because the one that got me thinking about all this was finding out that Marvel's Avengers in Shakespeare was done last fall. I'm like, wait, how did I not know this was coming?
Yeah, and that one was fun because that one was one where Marvel actually approached Quirk and said, "We want to do this, and we want your guy to do it," basically. And so that was lovely, and a fun project to work on. In terms of what I'm working on, I am working on a couple of different novels right now. I also am, just for fun, in like 6 months into the pandemic, I self-published a Shakespearean version of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein,
Ooh.
and I always wanted to do a horror trilogy of that, along with Dracula and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And so I am finally getting those written. In fact, I just finished the second draft of Jekyll and Hyde this morning. And so I'm hoping to get those out in time for Halloween this year.
Wow, the Jekyll and Hyde one, you have my attention, sir. I really want to read that one.
Well, great.
Oh my goodness, oh my goodness. So what other, I guess, stories do you read for fun, for your entertainment, amusement, and enrichment?
I really read all kinds of things. I read novels all the time, and in fact, a few years ago, when these books first started happening, I started being put on a lot of different sci-fi panels, because that was sort of where they, you know, one of the places that they could sort of categorize what I was doing. And I was terrible on those because I had not read a lot of sci-fi. And so I made a conscious effort. I asked a bunch of friends for recommendations of, you know, of good sci-fi, and basically, since, I mean, that was probably 6 or 7 years ago, and since then I've read hundreds of sci-fi books, trying to just bolster my knowledge of sci-fi a bit more. So these days, I mean, I'm in the middle of a Neal Stephenson book right now. I've just finished a Zora Neale Hurston book. I'm about to start reading a British romance novel. I don't read a lot of romance, but I'm at the end of this trilogy that this British author wrote. So just kind of all sorts of stuff.
Any particular, I guess, subgenre of sci-fi that has caught your attention, like space opera or just military SF, or anything in particular that you find yourself gravitating towards?
I think I tend to enjoy, I've just started sort of realizing this. I think I enjoy things that are based in like less space opera and more based in Earth's future, near future, even or somewhat distant future. I like some of the I'm trying to remember exactly what it's called. Hard science fiction, I think, is what it's called, right? Where they're really talking about the science a lot. I enjoy that, although I don't understand most of the science. I do enjoy that. It feels realistic. I appreciate the work the authors put into those. I do like a good sort of problem solving story as it relates to sci-fi. So I enjoyed The Martian a lot. But also things like, I don't know if you've read Wool by Hugh Howey.
Oh,
That's one
definitely.
that,
Long while out, yeah.
that I really, really enjoyed.
Nice. So, in terms of, do you have anything coming out soonish, or was Avengers the most recent?
Avengers was the most recent, I don't have something on the horizon at this point, so I'm working on it.
Can you talk about how Avengers was developed? I mean, you said that Marvel approached Quirk and said, "Hey, we want this."
And so they came with the idea of let's do an anthology of that includes the four Avengers movies adapted as Shakespearean plays all in one book. And so I took that and ran with it. I wanted to give some, because the Avengers movies, the four Avengers movies are part of the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe, I wanted to make sure I was giving a nod to the MCU. So at the start of each of those plays, there's a speech from the chorus that basically tells what has happened up to that movie, not in great detail or anything, but just essentially listing through all the movies and the stories that have happened before it. This was one I've learned over time working with Lucasfilm. I basically learned to do whatever I try anything, the worst they can say is no, but basically to try anything, and see if they take it. One of the things I did with Avengers is, I gave all of the Avengers something unique about the way they talk. This is one of the things that I've done with some of my Star Wars characters. And so I did it for the Avengers too. Like, for example, all of Iron Man's lines start with the letter I because Tony Stark is so egotistical, and also for Iron Man. All of Captain America's lines include the letters U, S, and A in them. So it's things like that. And that process was, I would say the editorial process was pretty smooth. The thing actually that was sort of funny about that editorial process was there were multiple times where they were like, should we really do this, or should we really be referencing this thing? And I had to be like, that's in the movie, right? Like that's the way that it's said in the movie. And so unless we're gonna veer off what the movie did, I think we should keep it. So, yeah.
Wow. So have you been to any conventions since the Avengers book came out?
Only one. I went to the Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, and that was last December, sort of in the lull right before Omicron hit. But other than that, I haven't been to any.
Have any fans reached out to you for, I guess, maybe introducing them to Shakespeare as a whole because of these pop culture ventures in that direction?
I have actually, mostly parents who tell me that their kids, you know, liked my books and then decided to try real Shakespeare. And that's, you know, I mean, that is both sort of my hidden agenda with these books and also like one of the greatest honors of my life, that kids might get turned on to Shakespeare through my sort of, you know, gateway drug.
Now, are you aware of the running joke in Star Trek about how Shakespeare is best enjoyed when performed in the original Klingon?
Yes, from Star Trek VI, I believe. That's it. Yes.
Have you been mulling over or approached to delve into any Klingon Shakespeare?
I have not been approached about any Klingon Shakespeare. I have over the years sort of, you know, talked about the possibility of a Star Trek something or other. I would love. I grew up with Star Trek just as much as I did Star Wars, and so I would love to do something in that world too. But just hasn't worked out yet.
I mean, with all of the expansion of the Star Wars universe, with all the new shows on Paramount, I can't imagine that wouldn't be a discussion someone could have somewhere.
Well, I would love it. Let it be known publicly. I would love that.
Right, well, we'll put it out in the universe. Hey, Paramount, if you want to dive into Star Trek as Shakespeare, Ian's waiting.
That's
you know,
right.
You can ready find his number really easily. Just, you know, reach out to Ian and Quirk and let's get this done.
Yep, exactly.
So where can folks find you online or on social media to keep up with whatever you're working on next?
Yeah, I have a website, which is iandescher.com. My name is spelled funny. It's I mean, Ian is normal, I-A-N, but then Descher is D-O-E-S-C-H-E-R. I'm on the socials in all those types of, you know, you can find me searching Ian Descher. Luckily I have a pretty unique name, so, pretty easy to find me out there.
Excellent. We'll include those links, but Ian, thank you for sharing your time today and, you know, helping expand the interest in Shakespeare into the various nooks and crannies of sci-fi fandom and pop culture fandom.
Well, thank you so much. And believe me, it was a total pleasure to do that.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
And again, Ian's website is iandescher.com. The Marvel Avengers, or Shakespeare's Marvel Avengers, came out, I believe, in October and is still easily available. Hang on, let me look. Yes, if you go to his website, you will see the link for William Shakespeare's Avengers, The Complete Works. And I believe the Frankenstein trilogy he mentioned is also there. So check those out. And like I said, if you're a fan of Shakespeare, you can see how a lot of it mixes in just the relationships, the tragedies, the comedies, the, in some cases, adventures. Just opening up the door to Shakespeare by bringing people in through various pop culture or fandom avenues, to me, is just adorable. It's, like I said, I had a soft spot for Shakespeare for a long while, and having these pop up every now and then just made me go, oh yeah. And yes, Tim and I talked about Shakespearean possibilities as alternate forms of storytelling in what will be the new Babylon 5 when we get it. And yeah, we're just pure speculating from a rabid fanboy, fangirl perspective. But we do because we care. So how about you? Do you like the Shakespearean takes of pop culture icons? Let me know. Give us a call. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. And you can also come to the website, sliceofscifi.com. Leave a comment in the discussion section of this episode. Or hit me up on Twitter, @sliceofscifi. Like I said, we talk about a lot of things, both online and at the website. So come on. Join the conversation or start a new one. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review, a rating. Let people know you are enjoying the interviews we do here, and maybe they should check them out for themselves. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all of the podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through Ko-fi and PayPal really do help keep the lights on around here, so thank you all for that. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi, and while there, you can pick a tier, any tier, and become eligible for perks. I do giveaways every month. I pick a winning email address out of the hat, and that person can choose from a stash of DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks, and books. Review materials I get here that I just don't have the space to keep around. So you guys get the swag, the good stuff. So you can join Patreon and be eligible for those rewards, or if you're just interested in donating every now and then to help out, the place to go is paypal.me/scifisummer or ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi. You can also purchase from our curated list of content over at sliceofscifi.net. That is a growing list of favorites, curated selection, so to speak, of movies, TV shows, and books that I and some of the other contributors here at Slice of Sci-Fi enjoy. Probably we'll expand that out to include the Babylon podcast and other shows in the future. But yeah, you can help support by purchasing any of the items there that catch your eye. Those are all affiliate links, just to note ahead of time. But yes, anything purchased through sliceofscifi.net will help support our efforts here. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Your support means everything. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.